भगवते वासुदेवाय।
भागवतम फिफ्थ कैंटो फिफ्थ चैप्टर टेक्स्ट 19।
इदं शरीरं मम दुर्विभाव्यं सत्वं हि मे हृदयं यत्र धर्मा पृष्ठे कृतो मे यदधर्म आराद् अतो हि मां ऋषभं प्राहुरार्या।
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: My transcendental body, Satchidananda Vigraha, looks exactly like a human form, but it is not a material human body. It is inconceivable. I am not forced by nature to accept a particular type of body. I take on a body by my own sweet will. My heart is also spiritual. And I always think of the welfare of my devotees. Therefore, within my heart can be found the process of devotional service, which is meant for the devotees. Far from my heart have I abandoned irreligion, adharma, and non-devotional activities. They do not appeal to me. Due to all these transcendental qualities, people generally pray to me as Rishabhadev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all living entities. Purport. In this verse, the words idam shariram mama durvibhavyam are very significant. Generally, we experience two energies, material energy and spiritual energy. We have some experience of the material energy, earth, water, air, fire, ether, mind, intelligence and ego. Because in the material world, everyone's body is composed of these elements. Within the material body is a spirit soul. But we cannot see it with the material eyes. When we see a body full of spiritual energy, it is very difficult for us to understand how the spiritual energy can have a body. It is said that Lord Rishabhdeva's body is completely spiritual. Therefore, for a materialistic person, it is very difficult to understand. For a materialistic person, the completely spiritual body is inconceivable. We have to accept the version of the Vedas when our experimental perception cannot understand a subject. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. The Supreme Lord is a body with form, but that body is not composed of material elements. It is made of spiritual bliss, eternity and living force. By the inconceivable energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord can appear before us in His original spiritual body. But because we have no experience of the spiritual body, we are sometimes bewildered and see the form of the Lord as material. The Mayavadi philosophers are completely unable to conceive of a spiritual body. They say that the spirit is always impersonal, and whenever they see something personal, they take it for granted that it is material. In Bhagavad Gita 9.11 it is said, Avajananti ma muda manushim tanumashitam Param bhava majananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Unintelligent people think that the Supreme Lord accepts a body composed of the material energy. We can easily understand the material body, but we cannot understand the spiritual body. Therefore, Rishabhdev says, Idam shariram mama durvibhavyam. In the spiritual world, everyone has a spiritual body. There is no conception of material existence there. In the spiritual world, there is only service and the receiving of service. There is only savior, seva and sevak. The person served, the process of service and the servant. These three items are completely spiritual and therefore the spiritual world is called absolute. There is no tinge of material contamination there. Being completely transcendental to the material conception, Lord Rishabhdev states that his heart is composed of dharma. Dharma is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 18.66. Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. In the spiritual world, every living entity is surrendered to the Supreme Lord and is completely on the spiritual platform. Although there are servitors, the served and service, all are spiritual and variegated. At the present moment, due to your material conception, everything is durvibhavya, inconceivable. Being the supreme, the Lord is called Rishabha, the best. In terms of Vedic language, nityo nityanam. We are also spiritual, but we are subordinate. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the foremost living entity. The word Rishabha means the chief or the supreme and indicates the supreme being or God himself.
Idam shariram mama durvibhavyam sattvam hime hridayam yatra dharma prishthe kritome yad adharma arad ato hi mam rishabham prahur aryam.
Lord Rishabhdev is himself giving information about his own nature, his body. And in this way, the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavat, they complement each other. Lord Chaitanya encouraged his followers to be always absorbed in Krishna Katha, which the Acharyas explain is of two types. Krishna's telling about himself, that is one type of Krishna Katha. And a devotee telling about Krishna, that is another type of Krishna Katha. So, in summary, Arjuna was not in a position to discuss Krishna Katha because he willingly took the position of a bewildered living entity. So in the first two chapters of Bhagavad Gita, we have Arjuna actually putting forward arguments against following Krishna's instructions. And at the right opportune moment, when Arjuna decides that all my logic, all my intelligence is not taking me anywhere, it's bewildering me more and more. And then he says, Shishyasteham, I would like to be your disciple. Indirectly, the first two chapters of Bhagavad Gita also disclose or also expose that there are various kinds of shastras, no doubt. The Vedas, they are voluminous, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of verses. But at the same time, they also have the application of Desha Kala Patra. The right time, the right place, and the right recipient of knowledge. Arjuna's arguments come from Dharma Shastra, Artha Shastra, and they are complete in themselves. Arjuna is saying, if I kill my superiors, I will incur sin. This is correct. If I don't want to fight because I don't relish the result of that fight, then I don't need to fight. I can be killed unarmed. But unfortunately, all these scriptural injunctions, they pale before Lord Krishna's instructions on Bhakti Yoga. So, what other Puranas, what other Upanishads may take a long time to disclose, in just two chapters, the Bhagavad Gita discloses that, especially in Kali Yuga, when there is very less time, people are unfortunate, they are less intelligent, there is no need to go by the Dharma Shastras and Artha Shastras. There is a Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, and his instruction, and if we follow that, we can easily find out what is the topmost goal of every human being. So something similar happens here. Lord Rishabhdev is teaching his own sons about the process of devotional service, about man's conduct in this material world. And especially in today's verse, he is disclosing something about his own body. Even Krishna does this in Bhagavad Gita. Ajopisan navyayatma bhutanamishvaropisan prakritim swama vishtabhya sambhavamyatma mayaya. He says, Ajopisan, I am never born. My transcendental body never deteriorates. Avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropisan prakritim swama vishtabhya. I come by my own energy. Similarly, here he is saying, my body looks exactly like a human form, but it is not a material human body. It is inconceivable. I am not forced by nature to accept a particular type of body. In many translations, Prabhupada actually even brings the purport in the translation, in the word-to-word meaning. Like here, for Shariram, Prabhupada gives the meaning as transcendental body, Satchidananda Vigraha. Or Dharma is translated as the real platform of religion, Bhakti Yoga. So, that is how Prabhupada helps the reader understand what is the essential purpose behind all these statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada begins the purport by saying that in this world we have experience of the material energy only. That is earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and ego. In one lecture Prabhupada gives a very simple example. If we take some mud, some clay, and if we make a doll out of it, so what do we have? We have earth. We have put some water in it to make it into soft clay. And then we put it out in the sun. Air is everywhere. And anything which is porous, air will go inside, come outside. So already there is earth, water. The sun is the fire element. So fire acts on it. Earth, water, fire, air. And ether is all pervading. So what is the difference between that mud doll and our bodies? There is only slight difference. We have three more subtle material elements, mind, intelligence and ego, and we have the most crucial one, that is the soul. Now that doll won't speak, that doll won't run, that doll won't eat anything, because there is no touch of the spiritual energy. But otherwise, our bodies, and just like we take this mud from the earth, we take some water from the ocean or a river, we draw some fire from the sun element, we draw some heat from the sun, the fire element. And let's say we are not satisfied with that doll and we smash it. Or just like so many idols are immersed after their worship is over, what happens? The earth settles down, the water element goes, the air is released in the air. So all these elements are taken from nature and after disintegration, they all go back. So there is nothing extra added and there is nothing deficient. This makes a particular class of philosophers think that, hey, we also are like that. When we die, everything becomes one. The mind becomes with the one with the supreme total mind, and there is nothing like spirit soul. If there is nothing like a spirit soul, then why are we entangled in so many emotions? The dolls won't fight with each other. The dolls won't quarrel with each other. Just like in China, there is an emperor and he wanted his own private bodyguards to be always with him. So when he died, he had something like many hundreds of bodyguards. So he had sculptors. They made statues, murtis of every individual bodyguard is replicated there with his own facial features and bodily height and everything. And they are still guarding the tomb of that emperor. But they are not fighting among themselves. They are not quarreling among themselves. Well, one thing, they also won't protect anyone. Because they are dead. They don't have anything. Like we may see an aeroplane going with supersonic speed in the sky. And Prabhupada once mentioned, let that aeroplane with its most modern sensors, electronic equipment, missiles, stay on the airport or the tarmac. Will it decide even in a million years to fly on its own? No. Although it has everything ready, it won't. All these instruments, they won't come to a decision that let's fly today on our own. But that is the fantasy of all science fiction writers. Man still feels that one day machines will think, machines will take decisions on their own. Like one lady, she wrote this novel, Frankenstein. One very disturbed doctor, he also was a genius, and one day he gets a corpse of a criminal and he puts some electric current into it, he puts some other chemicals into it, and then he locks that laboratory and then he finds that somebody is knocking from inside. And then to his horror, he finds that that corpse has come to life and is very powerful now. He was like an average human being, but now he's very powerful. And then he destroys everything. And then he comes to know that this new being which he's created wants to know who created me. And of course, finally, as a very tragic end, that creation, that so-called body which is created, it kills that very scientist. So, man knows that what he creates for his own exploitation or just for tinkering with material nature ultimately will cause his own downfall. So, like we see these news items about the world's best chess player got defeated by a computer. There's a very famous chess player, he's very expert. And then some scientists who took help from some chess players themselves, they put so many millions and millions of combinations into that computer. And they said, okay, now you defeat him. So in the first match, the player defeated the computer. In the second one, the computer defeated him. And they immediately think, wow, what if one day the computer becomes so intelligent, it takes over transportation, navigation, civic life, everything. A computer may decide, Mr. So-and-so, you are not fit to live in this city. You should die. So what am I supposed to do? So with these kinds of crazy things, today mankind is on the brink of that mental disaster that we made so much. But are we happy with it or is it working for us? Or working against us. But a simple thing, even a child can understand, that thinking means there is free will. Every individual being has his free will. The Ishopanishad purport explains, the Lord has a supreme initiating potency, initiative taking potency. And the spirit soul is part of it. He also has that initiating potency. Krishna may preach the most powerful philosophy to some living entity and he may decide not to accept it. Is it in the fault of Krishna that here is God, the Supreme Lord, giving the best of all knowledge, and this fellow is saying, no, I don't want to take it? Like yesterday we were reading about Aghasur, how he came to Vrindavan to kill Krishna, especially his boyfriends, the gopas, and his calves. He knew that once I kill all the calves and the boyfriends, everybody in Vrindavan will die. And Aghasur is thinking, I will kill Krishna because he killed my brother Bakasur and my sister Putana, and I will offer water as oblations in their memory. Now whom do you offer water? To the Pitras, forefathers. What do they do with that? Ultimately, the supreme beneficiary of any sacrifice is God himself. So how can you kill God and then offer a sacrifice in God's name? That intelligence is not there. They don't stop to think that, who is the ultimate beneficiary of my sacrifices? Bhoktarami yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram. Lord Krishna explains, ultimately, everything has to come to me. Unless I am satisfied, I won't let anybody go on his own. A simple example, a businessman has to pay his tax, or he has to pay his cess or dues, or people stay in somebody's apartment, they have to pay the rent. So if a businessman has paid his tax, but if the clerk or the manager in the state tax department pockets the money himself, unless the government says that in our records, it is clear that you have paid, we will keep on pursuing the matter. Isn't it? Like you are staying in somebody's apartment and you say that I gave the rent to this owner's servant. What if the servant ran away with the money? The owner will say, I didn't receive it. Who is the ultimate beneficiary? Me. So it's your responsibility to see that it has to come to me. So even in our daily life, we find that unless the ultimate beneficiary is benefited, that loop is not complete. That transaction is not complete. And therefore, whatever we do, therefore Krishna says, yat karoshi, yad ashnasi, yad juhosi, tadasi yat, yat tapasyasi kaunteya, tad kurushva, all that should be done for me. Not because I need it, but because you need it. Because when you give something and when I accept it, you will get that satisfaction. So therefore, it is said here, Prabhupada mentioned this 3-4 times, that for a materialistic person, it is very difficult to understand a completely spiritual body. For example, a prisoner may look at his clothes and say that, well, this also looks like a dress, maybe very coarse cotton. And he may see a lawyer coming in the prison, talking with different officials, talking with prisoners. And he may look at the lawyer's dress and say, it's a bit different, but it is cotton or jute, cotton, silk, maybe mixture of that. He may even go near the prisoner, the lawyer's body, and check whether there is any comparison or not. And he may say, I think the only difference between us is difference of fashion, difference of taste. My clothes are striped and you are wearing a suit. He's a fool if he thinks like that. That dress makes him stay inside that prison house. Have you seen anyone moving around in a prisoner's uniform? Is it fashionable to move around in a prisoner's uniform? No, it's a disgrace. Imagine you're traveling in a train and somebody comes in with that kind of striped dress. You may immediately say, move out, stay there, don't come near me. You may call the police. If you see somebody on the street, you may call the police. So,
There is no sense in analyzing the material made. The body may be looking similar. Similarly, the spiritual master's body or Krishna's body may look very similar. When Bhishmadev was showering arrows in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna's body, the arrows pierced Krishna's body. And there was blood. Now we may say, but Krishna's body has no veins. Asnaviram shuddham apapa viddham. The Ishopanishad describes, there are no veins in his body. And if there are no veins, that means there should be no blood. But because Bhishmadev was requesting that reciprocation in veerras, chivalry. So because of that request, Krishna's body also showed blood. Sometimes Krishna's body shows perspiration. But there is no perspiration. Our perspiration is smelly. It's like a refuse from the body. Already the body is dead in one sense. But what comes out of the body as refuse material is even more foul smelling. That's why we have so many talcum powders and so many lotions to keep that smell covered. You can't take it away. It can just be covered for some time. So therefore, there is this Bengali fellow, and he has a big beard, and one day he tries to eat jackfruit cutter, funnus. It's very messy, because the moment you start cutting the jackfruit, all that sticky thing comes out of it, and you really have to be skilled. You have to put oil all your palms. Then only you can do it. But for many people, the sweet taste of jackfruit is irresistible. It just is irresistible, especially if it is very, very ripe. But then he finds that before even he could eat, all his beard and everything is completely messy. And he's very proud of his beard. But then unfortunately he can't go in outside like that. So before even he could eat, he has to shave it off. So he shaves it off. And next day he sees an English gentleman, a sahib, and looks at him completely clean shaven. So he said, same problem. You also tried to eat jackfruit and it got messy. You had to shave your beard. He said, no. He said, no, it has to be like that. When I try to eat the jackfruit, it completely messed my beard. So therefore, when you are clean shaven, it means you also must be having the same problems. So Prabhupada's, I think it is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada who gave this Upadesha Upakhyan, that similarly, when I see my material body giving me so many pains, tribulations, problems, and I see Krishna in front of me, the only realization I have is, this is another material body. Especially impersonalists in India, they are very, very stubborn on two things. One is that, if you tell them, Krishna's body is Sachidananda Vigraha, his body is all spirit. Therefore, what he does is Leela. So they say, then my body also is all spirit. And what I do is also Leela. We say, no. Your body is material. Then Krishna's body also is material. They are very stubborn on two things. If you say Krishna's body is spiritual, what he does is Leela, then my body is spiritual, what I do also is Leela. You say, no, your body is material. Then Krishna's body also is material. They can never adjust to the fact that I am having a material body and Krishna's body is all spirit. Like one devotee who joined ISKCON, our Sachinandan Maharaj was describing, he's his godbrother. He said, when this person came to Krishna consciousness, he used to say, I am God. And he described in a very nice way. He said, he was the sum total of all ignorance. There is ignorance in so many ways. But the sum total of all ignorance is when the living entity starts thinking, maybe I am God. Like in Australia, there was one person who always would like to disrupt spiritual lectures. He was thinking very high of himself. So one day after Prabhupada's lecture, he put his hand up, said, "I want to say something." He didn't say, "I want to ask a question." He said, "I want to say something." He said, "You said so many things about spiritual life and Krishna and this and that. I feel I am the Lord of this material creation. The sun, moon, stars, they obey me. The tide happens because of me." So Prabhupada says, "What is the difference between you and everybody else? They all think the same way. They may not be saying this." And he was shocked. He was thinking Prabhupada will become very angry. Prabhupada will explode or he will curse him. Prabhupada says, "What is the difference? Every person thinks like that." Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada would give the example of a 10 paisa coin. A 10 paisa coin was lying in a forest path and a frog saw it. And the frog was looking here and there and he saw nobody's looking, so he jumped on it. And as he covered, 10 paisa coin is a small coin, so his body was covering the coin. He proclaimed, "I am the richest frog in the whole universe. There is no other frog who has a 10 paisa coin with him. And I am going to do a lot of things with this money. I'll do this, I'll do that." And before he could think of anything, a big herd of elephants was coming that way. Now imagine, one elephant itself is like a earthquake for a frog. And here a whole herd is coming on their way to drink water. All he had to do was run away, get out of the way, he could at least survive. But no, he still was clinging to that coin. He couldn't take it away. He was just thinking, if I move away from this place, somebody might take it. And obviously, you know what happens. He got completely flattened, flatter than the 10 paisa coin. Similarly, the insignificant living entity tries to cling to something, some insignificant thing in this material world. And when Krishna comes and shows his opulence, it is not that God comes as a spy or something and he just stays close by somewhere. But because of less intelligence, when Duryodhana saw the universal form of Krishna, there are many other people in the Kaurava assembly who folded their hands. But what was Duryodhana's understanding? This fellow is a juggler, this fellow is a magician. One day I am going to put you in jail. Today you just showed me some magic. They can never understand that. As here Prabhupada explains 9.11. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanum ashritam. It is never said that Krishna becomes human. Manushim tanum ashritam. Ashritam, ashray is shelter. So he just takes a human form. He can take so many forms. As Lord Matsya, there is a fish form. As Lord Varaha, the form of a boar. As Narasimha Deva, half man, half lion. All these forms together should convince us that this is not a material thing. I never see a man becoming a fish, becoming a boar, becoming half man, half lion. Somebody might do something, might do some makeup tricks, but you have to do superhuman activities when you do that. So therefore, friendship, love, society, these are the things a materialistic person loves very much. They are all available in the spiritual world. What we see here is just a reflection. In the last paragraph, Prabhupada explains very nicely, there is no conception of material existence there. What is the meaning of conception of material existence? Material existence means I want to be the enjoyer. So when we say there is no conception of that, that means no one wants to make the claim that I want to enjoy something. In one lecture, Prabhupada gave the example. Let's say there is a department store and they started their business in 1955. So obviously in 2005, it is their golden jubilee year, isn't it? So they would give a big advertisement in the papers saying that for the last 50 years, we are serving our clients. We are serving South Bombay, or we are serving so many people. Are they serving? Really? If you go there and say, this is the best mithai shop in all of Bombay, and you are saying that you are serving customers, please serve me, I am very hungry. They say, well, you have to take this coupon first. But why coupon? You said you are serving here. So Prabhupada says, unless you have money, you cannot be a qualified customer there. And you may say, this is common sense. Unless you pay money, how can you get something? Then why call it service? Call it business. If a human being thinks, my wife should serve me, then I'll give her some jewelry, I'll give her some clothes. If a wife thinks, my husband should give me something, then I'll do something for him. If a student thinks, my teacher should teach me something, only then I'll give him something. So what happens is, in the guise of service, it is plain exploitation going on in this world. Because no one really wants to serve. We are forced to serve. Just like in a prison house, every prisoner gets his quota. Morning 10 to 12, breaking stones. Then 2 to 4, sewing cloth. 6 to 8, garden, serving in the garden. He may say, I am having very variegated kind of service here. He say, no. What if you don't come for service? Well, they whip me. That's it. You would be flogged if you don't serve in the garden at 6 to 8. That means the service is coming out of you by force. Once you are free from this prison house, will you again come there and do some voluntary service? Oh, I stayed there for the last 20 years of my life. Let me again do some service. You say, hell in that place, you know, I don't want to go to this cursed place at all. So there is no love. So these are some of the things which distinguish between spiritual existence and material existence. And that's what Prabhupada means when he says that one can taste spiritual bliss anywhere in Krishna's cosmic manifestation. You don't need to be physically somewhere. Of course, once in a spiritual body, you get that freedom, that independence. Like Narad Muni. No one can stop him. No one can interrupt his preaching. No one can do anything to him. He's all powerful like Krishna himself. The only thing is, he doesn't claim he's all powerful. So, three things are mentioned about the spiritual world. Seva, service, savior, one who accepts service, and sevaka. And all three are eternal. Neither one wants to change their place. Of course, we can say that Krishna wants sometimes to take the post of a servitor. Because service has that special taste or relish that makes him suspect that they are dancing in front of me. My devotees are chanting my name. My devotees are dancing in front of me. Why do I get this feeling that they are enjoying more than me? It cannot be like that. In the material world, if a chauffeur is driving his master's car, the master doesn't think that, you sit at the back, today I will drive for you. No, never. Or a servant in the house is never told that, one day you order that chai leke aao and I will take some tea for you. He says, if I say that, this fellow will take away the whole household. So, never, ever, ever in the material world, a master may get the feeling that, one day I should also take the position of my servant. Because everything is very insecure. The master feels threatened if the servant gets more and more powerful. And here, in the spiritual realm, Krishna says, to one who is surrendered unto me, I give him my very self. You take everything, whatever you want. I don't fear anything. So, similar to this is mentioned in another purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where bhakti, bhakta and Bhagavan are described as eternal. They never change. In fact, that is one criteria of judging a Vaishnava Sampradaya. How do you know whether a Sampradaya is bona fide or not? One simple test will suffice. What is their conception of bhakti? Like there is a big movement. They say they are bhakti movement. But their understanding of bhakti is, it's a social movement. Bhakti is meant for reducing inequalities of income, making everybody literate. That's not true. Bhakti means solely reposing all our transcendental loving propensities in one person only, and that is Krishna. Bhagavan, who is the recipient of my service? Is he changing? Like we have in India, corruption is so widespread. You may say, I want a ticket. And the fellow says, no, I won't give. I don't have any. You push a $100 bill. He says, okay, I have one. That means that money changed him. Isn't it? There is a vikar in him. He said no first. Then you offered some money and he said yes. That means that one paper currency note did some change in him. This doesn't happen with Krishna. But we may say, but sometimes we see Krishna agrees. Like Krishna is the war is over. The Mahabharata war is over. The Pandavas are firmly in place. They are the emperors now. And then one fine morning, in the palace of the Pandavas, they see a big procession ready. There are so many people, soldiers, musical instruments. And then the Pandavas suspect something bad is going to happen. Krishna is going to leave. Thus we find that beautiful series of verses, Queen Kunti, she narrates that on the occasion of Krishna leaving for Dwarka. And she's saying, she doesn't say actually in those prayers that please don't go. She says, are you leaving us today, bereft of all protection? We will be mercilessly plundered by our enemies. We'll be defeated. Please. But then when Yudhishthira Maharaj comes and he says, Vasudev, don't leave, please. And that is where Krishna decides, okay, I'll stay some more time. But the acharyas explain, that doesn't mean there is a vikar in Krishna. Out of his own sweet will, he may decide to do something. Like one may chant Krishna's name till his teeth hurt. And Krishna may not reciprocate. Of course he does, but not overtly. And you may say, hey, what is this? I chanted, and then Krishna is not reciprocating. I prayed. Like I had this example. I was in Nasik and there was a Gita course going on. And just 15 minutes before the program was about to end, the lights went off. And I was saying, no, I have to finish this lecture now. And then prasadam distribution, all in, there's no candle nearby. So I said, okay, let us chant for some time. Surely Krishna will give us light. So in my foolish understanding, we started chanting. And that was one of the many concentrated chanting which I must have done. Thinking that I'll chant and light will come. And the whole audience will come to know how powerful these Hare Krishna devotees are. So I said, we'll chant for 15 minutes maybe. We chanted for 35 minutes and no light. Then I said, okay, Hare Krishna, we'll have a prasadam here like this. Anybody has any questions? And that whole night I was thinking, it was Krishna's program. Krishna was supposed to be the beneficiary. People would be happy seeing this miracle. Why didn't give that light? And then later in one purport, Prabhupada says, you may do everything for Krishna. It is not your right to make him behave accordingly. That's the meaning of Swarat. He is not like that clerk in the railway window that you push a currency note and immediately he becomes like this. That means immediate transformation. He doesn't care about you, whether you are dead or alive. He is after that thing which you give. But Krishna is not like that. He wants that pure reciprocation. And till that particular time, when that purification is not up to the level which Krishna wants, it goes on. Even with the gopis. So, that's what is the meaning of supremely independent. Now, doesn't mean that whatever you do goes in vain. Krishna says, whatever you do, even a little bit, saves you. So, spiritual world is simple. Where there is one savior, one person who is the beneficiary, there is an eternal process of service, and there are multitudes of servitors. And Prabhupada very, very cautiously mentions here, although there are servitors, the served and service, all are spiritual and variegated. Hanuman's service cannot be compared with the gopi's service. There are different flavors. There are different rasas. There is no competition amongst them. For the sake of understanding, one may be seen like this, one may be seen like that. But if you say to Hanuman, your service is lower than the gopis, he may say, who cares? I am happy with what I am. So when you tell somebody that you are lower than him, and if he says, oh yes, actually I should try to become like him, then there is some understanding to that comparison. But here, as one day Maharaj was saying, Radhananda Swami Maharaj, you can't convince a blade of grass to become a gopi in Golok Vrindavan. You can't convince it. It is happy the way it is. So that is something which we all want. To be situated in some post or position which is natural to us and be happy there. Two things people look in a job or a profession. I should be doing something which is natural to me. Like somebody says, I am naturally Ayurvedic physician. But then he says, I can't earn much money in it. So he is naturally situated, but he is not happy because he can't get money. Or somebody is getting more money, like I have an uncle, he is an engineer, but his passion is to produce books. So I asked him, you had a first class degree in engineering, and now you are publishing Marathi books? He said, what to do? That is something I did because of pressure, but this is what I like. So in the material world, you want to be situated where you like to do something and you should be successful in that. And most people don't get either of them. But in the spiritual world where everything is natural because Krishna is the only enjoyer, there is supreme bliss. Prabhupada explains here, the Supreme Lord has a body with form, but that body is not composed of material elements. It is made of spiritual bliss, eternity and the living force. So, thank you very much. We'll stop here. Any questions, comments, corrections? Sorry, I went about time. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Radha Gopinath ki, Tai Gaur Premanande.